allegiance to the flag of the United States of America. A nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
This is the January 29th meeting of the Inspector General Selection Committee. Committee welcomes the public here and also if any of the public wishes to make comment on any action items, there is a form that they can fill out and submit, and we will deal with public comment toward the end of our meeting. First of all, has everyone reviewed the minutes of the October 30th, 2024 meeting?
Dave, move approval.
Do I hear a second?
Second.
Any comments or suggestions, proposed additions or deletions to the minutes? Hearing none. All in favor of approving the minutes, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed? All right, the minutes are approved. New business. I think the one matter we have is the presentation of the annual report and update.
Good morning, everyone. Through the chair to the entire committee, thank you very much. I know this is a it takes a little bit of it out of your day to come.
Pardon my delay. Oh, that's right. 25 people trying to get into the building, and I was stuck for a few minutes there.
No worries. No worries.
Morning.
Dr. Freiberger, good morning. We literally just started, sir, so you haven't missed a thing.
Okay.
All right. So I presented this report to the City Council 2 weeks ago, and as per ordinance, we're required to present it to the IGSRC as well. So you've had an opportunity, I think, to read the report, I hope. We sent it to you in advance, so you had an opportunity to review it. I think the biggest thing to take away from this year is the efforts of the office in terms of the actual, it's hard for me to quantify the value of the deterrent factor of what our office does. I've tried to capture, in terms of dollars and cents, what we've identified as unnecessary costs, and those are broken down into three different categories: questionable costs, and you can see from the document what those look like. Approximately $7 million is what we're estimating, and compared to other offices in the state, that's a pretty good hit. Palm Beach County, for example, has a staff of about 30 folks. The OIG has a budget of about $5 million, and their question costs or necessary costs for the year were about $2 million. So I think the City of Jacksonville is absolutely getting a return on its investment for our office. I think we've highlighted, or with our in cooperation with the City Council and with the Mayor's Office and the administration, we've procured two different sets of software in the past year. One is for data analytics, and the other is for our case management system. Both those were a little bit of an expenditure by the city, but I think it's well worth it in terms of our capabilities, in terms of data analysis. Some of the cases that you looked at for this year are a result of some of those efforts utilizing technology to better enhance our ability to process data. Our office receives quite a few, you can look at the statistics, the number of complaints that we receive, and the various methods by which those enter our office. The bulk of the complaints come in either through email or through our system that we have online, the public-facing system through our website, where folks can anonymously or identify themselves and submit a complaint. We had 96 complaints that were open and reviewed, 145 additional emails, and then 701 emails that were also reviewed and assessed and moved on to the various departments within the city that can handle those complaints. So it's been a very busy year, very productive year. We have a proactive approach to our oversight. So we don't rely strictly on the complaints that walk in the door. We also look at the scene, I guess, across the political spectrum of Jacksonville and identify areas where we'd like to concentrate on. And some of those results, we've looked at COVID money pretty extensively, and some of the results of that those investigations are pretty self-evident. We have cases pending with the state attorney's office. We have cases pending with the U.S. attorney's office. and for an office that does administrative investigations, we've had quite a few turn into criminal investigations. So I'm very proud of the staff and the work we've done this year. I know there's some concerns about going forward. I have a meeting next week with finance reference potential of cutting budgets and looking for opportunities for additional revenue streams. And looking at other sister OIGs across the state, Miami has a very unique way of, I guess, collecting funds for the IG's efforts. They put a very, very small percentage, I think it's 0.001%, in every contract that's let, and that revenue stream goes toward the funding of the IG. So creative ways for us to get some additional funding for the office. Right now, our revenue stream is pretty much coming predominantly from general fund. We have an MOU with some of the independent agencies, JEA, JTA, the Port Authority, the airport, where they provide us a little bit of a revenue stream. The bulk of it comes from JEA, about $100,000, and then $45,000 comes from the additional independent agencies. And that MOU is set to expire in 26, so it's time to revisit that potentially. I don't know if we need to think about upping those contributions. Yes, ma'am.
Going to ask if there are annual escalators built into the contract.
There is, but I don't know that they're keeping with what we currently have. The bulk of our salary, or the bulk of our budget, is salary dollars. As you know, we have a very, very small percentage that goes towards training and travel. The training that we receive during the annual, or on the annual, on an annual basis, is really geared towards the requirements for accreditation. So, folks, to maintain that, we have a couple of CFEs in the office. We have everyone's certified in a particular field, but we have to have continuing credits to maintain those certifications. So that, I guess, that amount is really limited, and it's based just on our needs. We have nothing extra or above to reach out for. So at this point in time, really, if you have any questions, I'd be more than happy to answer them. But our office, in terms of projection, what we're planning on doing this year is kind of continuing the same. I think there's some monster projects on the horizon for Jacksonville, and the stadium being probably one of the biggest ones that we've seen in the last, 20 years. So I think that's going to take a lot of our time and efforts, potentially, and all the contracts and subcontract, everything that spins off of that is going to be a pretty tremendous undertaking. If you look at the language of that contract, we are identified specifically in the contract as having oversight of all those endeavors. So it should be a very interesting year and a half for us. We're fully staffed. My staff is 12 folks, including myself. And I think we're gainfully employed. And like I said, in terms of return of investment compared to other OIGs in the state, I think we're pretty much at the top of the list. So I open it up to any questions. I have the bulk of my staff here with us as well today. So if there's any questions that I can't answer, they certainly can.
I have a question. Of the complaints referred, how many of those complaints, if any, were referred to the Ethics Commission?
That's a good question.
Dave, do you have any? I'm trying to think.
In terms of actual referrals to the Ethics Commission, what we do normally is we first go through the Ethics Office. If we have something where we have an ethical question, we'll send it to them first. And we have an MOU with Ethics where we do all their investigations. So when you say refer to Ethics, I don't have an exact answer. I can get you that answer, but off the top of my head, I don't know what it is.
Okay, thank you. That'd be great.
I want to say none, but I'll double check.
Yeah, I suspect it's very few or none.
Correct. But I will absolutely get you an answer.
Are there any other questions?
Yes, ma'am.
I see the priorities in the back and know that you'll be adding the Jaguar contract. What are some of the, if you can say, some of the investigations that you have going on now?
Through the chair, if I may, I'd like to put my Deputy IG for investigations on the spot to give you kind of a rundown of what's currently in the hopper that we can talk about.
Good morning to the chair. The cases we have in the state attorney's office are primarily COVID-related, like from the Emergency Rental Assistance Program. Several of those, we have one, for example, where a housing authority employee was using the identity of some of her personnel that was living in her building and was benefiting from them. Our case that's in the federal court is involving also COVID grants, where a landlord was he had multiple properties and he was using people's names. He would pay them, he would get money, and then pay them just to be able to use their name, saying that they lived on one of his properties, things like that. So that's moving forward. Certain things that I'd be happy to tell you as soon as we get them arrested or indicted. I can say a little more about it, but we're still heading that same way. We're also looking this year at some P-card things. We've never done that before, so now we're kind of looking at that and just kind of checking some boxes and seeing what the purchases, are there backup documents for these things and stuff like that. Right now it appears that everything's on the up and up, but we're kind of partial to that. We got our analysis done by our analyst using the software that the IG mentioned, and then we divided them up and I gave each one a case or two to look at. Hey, dig into this and see what we can find, and then we'll let you know.
Thank you very much. Just one other quick question to the chair, and I probably know enough about this to be dangerous with my esteemed colleagues up here, but the legislation that requires not to take anonymous complaints,
correct,
does that impact you at all?
It does not. That only applies to ethics. So for us, it doesn't apply. So we can take any complaint. If you write down on a napkin, if you call it in or send in through a pigeon, we can take that complaint and investigate it. In fact, we get referrals from ethics because they are hamstrung in terms of their ability to look at things. So the legislation has no effect on us whatsoever.
So I would think that would lead to an increase in people coming to you if they wanted to remain anonymous.
Correct.
If I may, that was kind of where my question was going. Is it possible for you to refer complaints that you receive and invalidate it then to the Ethics Commission for the Ethics Commission to investigate them?
In terms of
compliance with the ethics.
Correct. Rules. So through the chair, I don't know if that would be a workaround the intent of the legislation. I'm not quite sure. I have to think about that.
It's a question. I understand
the question. I'm just trying. Ms. Oberdorfer and I have a meeting scheduled to discuss a protocol on how we can do those types of things. So we're going to sit down, we're going to get OGC involved and sit down with the intent of the legislation and our current mandate per the charter and hers, and kind of see if we can work out an official MOU as to how to get those things to the commission. The commission, from my understanding of the legislation, is precluded from investigating, but if we're doing the investigation and then referring it to you.
Well, we can consider, we can consider sworn complaints according to the investigation.
No, I mean, something that comes in anonymously.
Right.
If we were to investigate it and then it had an ethical slant to an ethical concern, can we then, as the IG...
That's the thrust of my question.
Correct. Can we be the affiant, if you will? So it's no longer anonymous, right? It's coming from our office. That's a good question. Don't know.
So I can answer that.
Good.
Mr. LaSalt, David Johnston, I am the Deputy Inspector General for Audit. Mr. LaSalt asked me to reach out to some of the other IG offices to see how they're dealing with the new legislation. I've spoken to Miami-Dade in regards to, do they have an official MOU? How do they do this? And they have legal counsel there within their office who talked about some concerns of circumventing the law. They didn't want to appear to be circumventing the law by doing ethics investigations and then swearing to it and becoming compliant with the law. So the position that they have currently is if they do an investigation independently, determine that there's some ethical issues, they're well within their rights to make a sworn complaint to the Ethics Commission. Where it gets grayer is if ethics gets an anonymous complaint, they can't do anything. Can they refer it to the OIG to investigate? That appears to be circumventing the law, the purpose of it. So is that contrary to law, I think that's a good question that we need some legal research. I think that's why we want to get with ethics. I'm still reaching out to Broward. They're similarly situated to talk to their IG, to get what their process is. But we want to make sure that we can refer things that are appropriate but not, also not circumvent the legislature.
I have a question about that. One can imagine someone calling the ethics office, not the ethics commission, but the office, to ask what is the procedure, and they would be told, well, you have to file a sworn complaint if you want the ethics commission to address it. I wonder, you know, again, this is hypothetical, if someone could at that time then, someone from the ethics office could at that time then recommend, perhaps you need to talk to the IG. Does that make sense?
That does. You know, I think that would have to be something that we would talk to OGC about, as far as where are we within our rights to...
Right. Then this is new territory, something
exactly.
We need to flesh out and figure out what the appropriate response is. I understand what you're saying.
It complicates the situation because we do the investigations for ethics because they do not have their own investigators, to my understanding. So drawing that line is sort of, it can be a little in the gray area of where OIG investigations start and where ethics investigations start. We just want to make sure we comply with the law.
Sure. Thank you.
Well, we appreciate that.
So do I. I guess one more thing, I guess, drew the chair to Ms. Bowling. The page you identified on 13, those are the priorities for the audit unit. But I think for us this year, with the new capability in terms of data analysis, we're looking at a couple different projects and taking large chunks of data and trying to parse it out for investigative leads. The biggest thing we've seen in the past probably 3 years, the majority of the stuff we're working on is lack of oversight and lack of compliance with some of the terms of contracts. So we have one person right now in our contract compliance office, and that's even a little bit of a stretch. So that all my folks at some point in time, whether they're investigators or auditors, are having a piece of the compliance piece. And the lack of oversight has led probably to the vast majority of our investigations. So going forward, I think this year and into the future, that piece of our mission will probably be the largest emphasis is on the oversight of contracts and the oversight of some of the grant programs. Because, quite frankly, I mean, we're looking at trying to get the most bang for our buck in terms of return on investment, and that's where the money is. You know, so we can the complaints that come in sometimes are, I don't want to say, not significant, but we're trying to do the ones that have the most impact on the city and the city dollars, and that's just chasing the money, quite frankly. So that's where when you ask what our emphasis will be on, it'll be on those types of things. The big dollar, you know, the potential for risk for the city. We looked at this, at the microgrant program, for example, and the microgrant program, we found flaws in that there's requirements for the recipients of those grants monies to get training and to adhere to a certain criteria to get the money. And we found that the vast majority of those microgrant recipients did not adhere to the requirements of the grants. So I know that there's a perception that because the dollar amount was so small, that really who cares kind of thing. But from my perspective, from our office's perspective, the liability for the city is just as much regardless of the amount of money involved. So in other words, if you have a mom and pop football coach, you know, who receives Ms. Grant money and they're not being vetted and they don't have insurance, and God forbid, last or 2 years ago when the coach was driving the kid home from one of these mom and pop, you know, recipients and was killed in a drive-by. So the liability for the city is exponentially higher, unfortunately, for some of these smaller, you know, grant recipients. So that's from our perspective. We look at things and try to focus on the big dollars, but we have to understand that those little dollar, you know, still present potentially big problems for liability for the city. So we work quite closely with risk management, and we try to identify those areas of risk. And we try to enforce, you know, and emphasize that just because it's a small dollar program, the risk for the city is the same, and these things are in place, you know, to make sure that folks are being trained and they are doing the background investigations on these small little, you know, mom and pops. But Yeah, that's kind of, to answer your question, our emphasis for the year is going to be chasing the big dollar items and then opportunities to reduce risk and liability for the city proactively. And then whatever comes through the door, we react to.
Thank you. Very helpful.
Yes, ma'am.
Through the chair, when you say that, because I'm on a tree commission, I share that, and that's most of the problems that we have a lot is that the oversight over the contracts and grants we have. Seeing that there's a total of 12 staff, you guys have enough of individuals to help with that?
Through the chair, to Dr. Chambers, to answer your question, I would say no, but I know the budget constraints are such where I don't see that changing anytime in the near future. The way the contracts are written, in the language of the contract, it always identifies someone who's responsible for the oversight of that contract, whether it's parks, whether it's a department, or whether it's an individual. And sometimes, maybe it's an education piece, maybe, I don't know if that's the answer, but it seems like the individuals identified to oversee that contract or that grant are lacking in terms of their expertise, or because it's a collateral duty and that's not their primary function, so it becomes something that's kind of, you know, yeah, I'm responsible for that, but that's not my day-to-day job. So we find that the Office of Grants has made some changes recently, and they've been, I mean, very welcomely received, because they're doing 1,000% better than they were doing 2 years ago in terms of their oversight and compliance. So they're going in the right direction, but there has to be a continued, you know, steady drumbeat of the importance of oversight and making sure that we're getting what we're paying for, and that you know, the little pieces of the contract that are important are being actually implemented.
So basically, your solution is to stay focused on those areas.
That's exactly right. Okay. And to emphasize the need for training and to make sure that the folks who are doing contract compliance and grant compliance are actually trained and understand what they should be looking for. In the new procurement code, we had an opportunity, myself and Mr. Samples, when Leanne Cumber started this initiative quite some time ago to rewrite the procurement code, and we had a piece early on sitting at the table and come up with ideas, and our input into that code was we offered up the IG to identify, like a red flag, if you will, a system or a way, a matrix, if you will, to identify potential contracts would be of serious concern or risk, whether it's the dollar amount, whether it's, you know, single source. There's red flags in the procurement world that you can identify which contracts would be more at risk than others. And so we put that into the procurement code, where we would be more than happy to identify, you know, those high-risk contracts. And then, as to your point about maybe those are the ones that need a little bit more focus. So if you're dealing with a high dollar amount, sole source, a protected class like children, youth, elderly, veterans, those are the red flags that we would suggest that you pay a little bit more attention to.
Thank you.
Yes, ma'am.
I have an additional question. You mentioned training. One of the central functions of the Ethics Office is to provide training for city employees on the Ethics Code. Is there any room for any possible synergy with the Ethics Office with respect to some of that training? I mean, there may not be much of an overlap, but I'm thinking
right.
Rather than duplicating efforts and subjecting people to multiple trainings from multiple offices, it might make more sense where it's possible to collaborate.
Agreed. Yes, we participate in the newcomer orientation. One of my folks always goes to that, and we give that briefing to the newcomers coming in. But there's a couple pieces of legislation that would probably help our cause, and I don't know if we can find a sponsor within the City Council or if the OGC can write the legislation. That being one of them, and the other one being the code is not clear in terms of when you're obligated as a city employee to report known misfeasance, malfeasance, fraud, waste, and abuse to our office. So we're trying to tighten that up, but I have to find a sponsor within the City Council or OGC to write the legislation for us to kind of beef up that part of the charter or the code where it talks about when is you have to report to the OIG. So we're working on that as well. We have the draft language. We're just trying to work with a sponsor now to find a sponsor to do that for us. We'll see.
The chair to Mr. LaSalle, perhaps can the administration sponsor that?
Absolutely.
Yeah, I'd be glad to do that.
Absolutely.
And also work with you. Maybe we can look at our vacant positions and changing those over to compliance in some of these risk areas.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Right now we do work with procurement in terms of identifying what those red flag contracts look like. And we're trying to work on a training piece as well for contract administrators who attend, to your point, Dr. Freiberg, to assist in that.
Great. Thank you.
Anything else?
Are there any other questions or observations? Do we need to approve this report? I'm not sure what our next step is.
What the next step is, we will draft the minutes and then provide them to you for approval, and then they get published in accordance with the policy, and that's pretty much it.
Okay, all right. Thank you. Then I guess we proceed to the third item on our agenda. Any other business?
Through the chair, I do have one item of business, I guess new business or business, something to consider is in March, I'm at my point where you guys have to reconsider whether or not you're going to keep me. So keep that in the back of your mind. Correct.
I was trying to avoid that.
Yes, I know that, but I want to make sure it was on the horizon just so no one forgets about it.
I don't think you'll let us forget.
Well, I actually have a question for the chair. Would you like to set up a meeting about it? I know in the past that's what we did. Like, they put a meeting date in the schedule. Like, is there anything you want to work with me, Dr. Freiberger?
In anticipation of what's coming out in March?
Yes.
That's what you're asking. Again, as I said, I've not done this before, so I'm not sure exactly what's required. If you think that that's necessary...
Whatever you all decide on.
Judge Cover has been a chair before, he could tell you.
I think that is probably required.
Yeah.
The code, through the chair, the code does require a meeting of the IGSRC 6 months prior to my termination, or to what would be my termination, to decide whether or not there's going to be a continuation.
Okay, let's do it. I think I'm not sure.
September would be that 6 month. September of 25
right.
would be the 6 month to March of 26 is when my term expires.
I'm not sure at that point. I'm not sure I would still be chair. The position of the chair rotates.
I think Dr. Chambliss may be on the hook.
I think still need to. That's something we need to do in the future. No, I mean, because that's what they've done. That's all I can ask. We've always done that. We should carry on with that model and all that.
Yes, ma'am. So. When are we scheduled for next IGSRC? 6 months from now.
It would be 6 months from now.
So, in theory, we could move it to September, right?
That's perfect. And then, yeah.
And then accomplish it all at one time.
Okay.
Do my annual review, do it all then.
In September?
September of this year.
That sounds reasonable.
Sounds good to me.
Perfect.
Does anyone else have any other business? I think it's now time for public comment. Is there anyone from the public who would like to make a comment? As no one has appeared and there's no new business, then I guess we're there.